everyone. I'm Sandy Robinson, your host of RevOps Unboxed. During each episode, we're diving headfirst into conversations with some of the most incredible RevOps leaders out there. Not CEOs, not big flashy executives, not vendors. We're talking to the people who are actually doing the work, the ones leading teams, the ones in the trenches, grinding it out every single day. We're taking things up a notch, getting deeper, having more fun, and as always, keeping it real. Remember our theme, RevOps Unboxed, and today we're unboxing it all. Let's get started. Hey everyone, I'm Sandy Robinson, your host of RevOps Unboxed. I am so pumped to be here today. I have a really special guest. I've been following this guy for some time. I've been able to meet with him at some conferences, see him speak, see him do some keynotes. Best-selling author of Gap Selling. He is the CEO of a sales growth company. I have the one and only Keenan here with me today. Thanks for joining, Keenan.
Thanks, sister. I'm glad to be here. Really love your energy. It's going to be fun.
Woo! I'm so excited. I'm pumped up about this. So for folks who don't know you, maybe if you can start off by introducing yourself, tell us a little bit about you and what you do.
You did a good job. I'm the author of Gap Selling, a sales methodology book, fun book to read. The author of the ASG Revenue Speed Model, a framework for sales enablement and revenue enablement folks to actually get more effectiveness and efficiency out of their enablement efforts and drive more revenue, and the CEO of a sales growth company, a full service training and sales consulting, management consulting firm. How's that?
I think that's awesome. And, you know, normally I don't have people that aren't like actually in the RevOps, like working at a RevOps company. But, you know, what I love about you and what you do, first of all, you've been there, done that. You've done this shit. You practice what you preach. You're out there. You're not just writing a book. You're doing it, right? So I thought it was really important to get your perspective. And plus you work with hundreds of leaders in enablement, in revenue operations, in sales, in all these different functions. So I think you provide a really great perspective for revenue operations practitioners that are really approaching their day-to-day.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, that's cool. Well, tell me a little bit about your speed model. You know, when I saw you talking about it, what really hit me was the importance of how operations and revenue enablement or sales enablement really kind of bring it all together. So maybe you can just give folks a little bit of a high level on what the framework is all about.
Yeah, well, I think what I'd like to talk about first is why I wrote it. I think that's
okay,
why I created it, right?
Yeah.
My experience has been so far that sales enablement or revenue enablement, whatever word we want to use, far too often was over-indexing on the skills development piece, right? They saw themselves responsible for the training and skills development and sales playbooks and all that, which is fantastic. Like, there's nothing wrong with all that. But as I had more and more conversations or people would call us up and say, hey, we're looking for training or we're looking for some consulting and we're working with the sales enablement operations, not sales ops, but sales enablement groups, it was baffling to me how disconnected they were from the actual outcomes. So it wasn't uncommon for us to say, okay, well, can you share your win rates? And they're like, well, we don't know them, right? Or we're not exactly sure what they are. Or we'd ask them to say, okay, so what's your average sales cycle? Well, we're not quite sure. You know, we have to go back to sales ops for that. Or I'd ask, what is your average contract value? What's it been over the last 2 or 3 years? Is it increasing or decreasing? We don't know. We have to go to sales ops for that. And I thought to myself, depending on the size of the organization, this function, sales enablement, is a $1 million, $5 million, $10 million, $15, $25 million cost center for sales, depending on the size of the organization. And they don't know these numbers, right? So then I would say, okay, well, what makes you think you need training? What makes you think you need support or help? And they'd say things like, well, our sales team's doing awful discovery. Okay, well, define awful discovery. And sometimes they did a decent job with that. Other times they didn't. They'd say, well, you know, they have a hard time getting buyers to move to the next stage, or they ask really bad questions, or, you know, and I'm like, okay, great. So because of the bad discovery, how is that affecting win rates? We don't know.
Yeah.
And so I remember one time I was talking to a rather large enablement team for an extremely large organization. We didn't win this deal. I think we scared the hell out of them. But I asked one of the people on the call, I said, okay, so how do you measure success? Like, how are you showing movement? How are you showing improvement? And her exact words were, oh, we're already tracking improvement. I said, really? What is one of the measurements? She goes, the number of times they log into the portal. We have grown that by 25%. That was her definition of improvement and success. It's a massive, massive company. And that was her definition of success, is that more people will log. And here's the part that really got me. And is those of you who know me, you'll get where I'm coming from. Sandy, you do. Those who don't, you'll think I'm crazy. I almost blew a gasket because the woman, not only did she say that, she said that with a level of indignation that I was suggesting that her organization was not tracking the right things. So she was almost like angry at me because I implied, because they didn't know some of the sales numbers, that they were not able to actually properly manage their org. And she goes, oh no, we do that. And we've seen a 22% increase in people logging into the LMS. I'm like, oh my gosh. That's why I wrote it.
Wow. Yeah, that gets me thinking, like, it's this box checking mentality, and there's such a disconnect from like what you see on a stupid slide versus the actuality of what happens, and people logging in isn't a leading indicator for anything other than we know you don't have SSO in your organization because people have to actually continue to log back in. Right. So, you know, these kind of things, they drive me nuts. I mean, I once work with a sales leader who had this, like this one pie, right? Like the big pipeline pie. And it was like just this giant thing. And I'm like, you know, this is great, but some of these deals are closing out, you know, they're out 3-4 years in the future. And you know, our selling cycle is 3 to 4 months. So we need to look at different metrics, you know, like how does it change week over week, month over month? Like you don't see that in this giant pie, but you know, sometimes people are just tied to these things and their charts. It's tied to their egos and, you know, all these other things. And it's just really hard to get, you know, people to see, like, you have to really look at, you know, these metrics that matter.
So you need to look at the metrics that matter, no question. And so the first question you asked me is, what is the speed model? So once I recognized that I felt that far too many sales enablement organizations were too heavily indexed on learning and development, then I started looking and said, okay, well, at the end of the day, why did they invest? Why did the organization invest in sales enablement or revenue enablement? And it's really one simple answer. And what is that, Sandy? Why did they invest?
Because they want to hit their revenue targets.
Thank you. That's it. That's right. So if that's the goal, and I don't blame just revenue enablement, I blame the whole organization. If that's the goal, then revenue enablement needs to take learning and development and connect that to what I call the opportunity layer, what I call the actual in-game time play. Then they need to connect that to the predicted outcomes, right? Mm-hmm. So when I went through that in my head, I said, well, wait a minute. There's three layers in a sales organization. There is the sales, what we call the skills layer. And that's where enablement is over-indexing right now. And that's where they're spending all the time developing the skills, creating the playbooks, creating the videos, creating the LMS. You know, all of that training stuff is fantastic. But that's the skills layer. But if you then don't take that skills layer and connect it to what we call the opportunity layer, then you have no way of tracking how is the skills development actually working in real game time scenarios. So I liken it to sports. It's particularly football because it sits well, right? They play football, but even on the sideline in the middle of the game, they will come and sit down and they'll pull open a Surface, a Microsoft Surface, and they will watch video and they will assess what did that quarterback just do? What did that wide receiver just do in terms of what they were supposed to do or taught in training? You see what I'm saying? They'll say, hey, man, you missed that read. Remember when we talked in training? You missed that read. So they actually take the skills and move it to game time. There is very, 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 very little of that within the sales organizations. And sales enable doesn't connect. There's a whole bunch of reasons for that. So we created the opportunity layer. And then from there, it's still not enough. From that opportunity layer, you then have to determine How is it affecting the deals? So notice the transition here. If I had to create concentric circles, the bottom layer is all about the person. Then the middle layer is the bottom half of that, or half of that is about the person. But the second half of the opportunity layer starts spinning into how is the deal? How did that salesperson affect the deal? Which then leads us to the forecasting layer, which is what deals are being forecasted? Why are they being forecasted? What is your criteria for forecasting? What particular data are you underlines that forecast? And then how predictable is that forecast? And that, and right. Does that predictability, watch this, connect to what I'm doing in the skills development layer? Mm-hmm. Does it connect? Mm-hmm. And right. There is very little, if any of that, in sales enablement today. And until we get there, we're never going to be as successful as we can.
Wow. That is like, you know, massively huge advice, because taking that, you know, for enablement leaders to take that skill, you know, because it, a lot of times, you know, let's be honest, it becomes about like my job justification as a sales enablement leader, right? Mm-hmm. Like I've got to be delivering these things. I've got to be delivering these skills. But ultimately, if we need to understand if they're effective and if they're actually affecting yes. change, they're affecting things like deals. So how yes. do you apply it in the real world? So how do you actually orchestrate it as it comes to a deal in stage one? So if you're teaching them a discovery call, what do those deals look like? And then what happens with those deals?
Yes.
It sounds like that's what you're saying. Like, you know,
yes.
okay, did you have this conversation and that resulted in XYZ, and therefore it impacts the forecast and the predictability
yes.
and all those things. Hence what you said earlier, knowing your metrics, knowing your deal cycles, right? So
yes.
in order to impact that deal cycle, you need to know what the hell it is.
Yes.
In order to say, did my coaching work for it? And now at one point it was a 90-day sales cycle, deal cycle, and now we're at 82 days.
Yes.
So, you know, I shaved off 8 days and that equates to this much, right?
Yes. Yes. And I can even look you in the eye, Mr. CRO or Mrs. CRO, and say, we did that because we recognized these skills were missing. Right. Mm-hmm. Now in the speed model as well, we demand for the ASG speed model, if people want to Frankenstein it, that's their option, but we demand that you have to have a methodology
right.
because the methodology now acts as the framework for whatever it is you're trying to capture. So using gap selling is a very clear methodology and has a very clear articulation of what we call bid data, what data you're mm-hmm. supposed to get from a buyer that increases the probability of buying. And there are 10 elements of that. So it's very easy for us to go from skills layer to opportunity layer simply by tracking that data. And mm-hmm. we can say, oh, if the person did get this data and did get this data, we've seen a 15% increase in win rates, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they're struggling at getting this data. So we can go say, why? Let's go, okay, which data are they having a hard time? Are they having a hard time getting the gap? Are they having a hard time understanding the problem? Are they not defining the problem? Are they not getting the decision criteria? They're not quantifying the impact. So all of that is so clearly stated that we can literally see, and then we actually have a software application that sits on top of Salesforce that actually gives managers the ability to see that data, rank that data, and provide feedback back to the rep that says, hey, man, you don't have impact. What impact you have, I'm giving it like a 2. And if you don't get more of it, we already know that this deal is not going to close. So that allows us to create hierarchies of the deals within the opportunity layer, which then allows us to pick what we choose to forecast based on that hierarchy and based on historical analysis. So we've integrated that opportunity layer right into the skills management layer and pushing it right up to the forecasting layer. It's a game changer.
Wow. Wow. I didn't know that. That's awesome. I mean, that's really taking it back into how do you really apply it? How do you track it?
Yes.
And how do you actually get some value out of it? And you know, you mentioned earlier, like this, you know, people don't know their metrics and working with, you know, I've heard you talk about this, working with sales operations, and some teams do it well, some teams don't. What have you seen? Why do you think that is? Can you talk a little bit about that?
I don't want to alienate people. Look, I guess I'll just do a broad swath, and I am pretty comfortable that this is going to fall on deaf ears because most people don't want to say that's me, right? Like it's like the Surgeon General trying to say that America has a health problem and, you know, 80% of us are obese. I'm pretty comfortable if you ask the average American if they're obese, I'm sure 25% will come back and say yes, because the other 60% are just lying to themselves. You know what I'm saying? Right. And the Surgeon General is not here trying to be a jerk, right? He's just saying, look, this is the facts, right?
Right.
So here's the facts. There is such a culture of driving a sale now that organizations really are unwilling to step back and build a process that slows down to hurry up, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, which is a huge one, the lack of desire or inability to hold frontline managers accountable for the work. Mm-hmm. So we have shown this model to countless organizations, particularly the middle piece, the opportunity layer. We've shown the application that sits on top of Salesforce. We've shown them how the scoring works. We show them how it connects. We show them how it improves forecasting, et cetera. And more times than I prefer to hear, literally this is what they say to me. This is amazing. Pause. We could never get our frontline managers and salespeople to do this. I can't think of another industry. I can't think, watch this. I can't think of a professional football team, right? That come out and said, we could never get our football players to sit in video review at 5 a.m. Right. We could never do that. So we're not gonna do it. No, they're like, they literally, if you ain't gonna do this, next up. Next up.
Yeah. Right? It's like the tail wagging the dog, you know?
The tail wags the dog in sales more than any other function I've ever seen in my life, ever.
Yep. Yeah. I think sometimes, you know, leaders are petrified that people are going to leave, you know, like they're just going to walk out and leave. And, you know, I think, you know, people are going to leave because your company has a bad culture or you have a bad leader.
Yes.
They're not going to leave because you're making them do a process that makes sense. You know,
yes.
There's a right way and a wrong way to do it. Right. Mm-hmm. So you can roll out a process and then not walk the walk yourself as leaders. And I think that's where the shit hits the fan is when companies try to mandate stuff and then they don't actually do it. They don't follow through with it. They don't, you know, truly ingrain it into their processes. Mm-hmm. And they're just kind of making excuses for the fact that it's going to be the flavor of the week. And then the salespeople, you know, for whatever reason, and I don't even really think it's them winning, quote unquote. I think it's just, you know, salespeople don't want to change. They, you know, especially if they're good, they've been successful. They've been doing things the way that they've been doing it. Yep. So, I think it's tough. And I think leaders have to, like, you know, make decisions, like real decisions. And, you know, I always say, like, you know, and I've experienced this before. Well, we can't do that because we're going to lose all these people. It's like, well, you know what? If we're going to lose them because of this, then go for it.
You don't have them.
I'd rather know now, right?
If you're going to lose people over that, then you really don't have them.
Right, right. And you're, you know, or there's really an underlying reason why they don't want to be there in the first place. Mm-hmm. And it has nothing to do with whatever process you're trying to roll
100%,
out.
100%. One of the things I find that fascinating too, in the same vein, is because they do what they do here, they waste money. So a perfect example, it doesn't matter, it's happened more than once, but there are times that people hire us. And mm-hmm. the way we work is we do a very thorough upfront discovery and we understand the business problems all the way through the entire sales org. We understand the business problems, the impacts, the root causes, you know, the root cause of why it's happening, how long it's been happening. We have a full business case blown out. And they usually really appreciate that level of discovery because if we don't see a problem, we don't even take the business. Like, I don't see why you should invest in this. Like, we don't get it. Or we're like, this is big. And if you don't change, it's going to be costly. So it is not uncommon where we make a recommendation at the end of that process. We do not do proposals. So once we've got the gap, the current state, future state, the gap, the whole thing's defined, we say, this is what the recommendation process is. Here's what you told us. Did we get it right? Here's the cost of inaction. Did we get it right? Yes. Here's the cost of investing in us. And here is our recommendation. And we spell it out. Every once in a while, some people say, we don't want any of the back end reinforcement piece. We can handle it. Okay. So I just recently found this out. A customer that we work with about 3 years ago, maybe four, invested very heavily in gap selling training, but refused to do any of the back end support, right? Like the reinforcement, the management training, any of the stuff that makes it stick. Well, I just saw the other day on LinkedIn, someone at that organization was saying they're now putting in Medic. They're like just switching. So all that money that was spent on the front end has been lost. And they're going down the whole process all over again of trying to find a new method because someone else came in and it wasn't working. This is what they do. This is what we do. We do not commit and do not become experts in it. And it's just a flavor of the month. A new person comes in or a new CRO comes in and they just keep churning that wind, throwing that money away. That's a problem.
It's crazy. And it's like slapping training on a problem isn't going to fix it.
No.
Like the training event is an excitement. It's a kickoff. It's important. It's critical. But in order to adopt it, you have to keep taking the pills.
You got to do the work.
You got to track it and you got to reinforce. And you mentioned something about the manager piece because I've seen that a million times. You know, I've been doing this a long time and it's like, if the sales leader is not bought in and not doing it and not reinforcing it, you're cooked.
You're cooked. The sales leader has to reinforce it. The frontline manager has to drive it.
Right.
They are the linchpin. If the frontline managers are not driving it and holding people accountable and doing the reviews and doing the assessments all within the framework of the method or training or whatever it is you implemented, you're dead in the water. Dead in the water. And you triggered something. And we're talking about a lot here at ASG. We feel that there is an alarming increase and a desire for an easy button. Sales has gotten to a place where they just want the easy button. Give me the tool that's going to do it. Give me the application that's going to do it. Give me the one sheet that's going to do it. And it represents itself or is what's indicative of this is you see a lot of these, some are good, some are bad, not the point. These sales influencers, and they'll say something like, I have this cold call sheet with 10 questions, or I have, you know, this hit me, you know, hit flow in my comments and I'll send it to you. And they'll get like 3,000 comments of flow, flow. And that tells me that all people are looking for is that one little thing. Just give me that thing, give me that thing.
Yeah.
And I'm going to blow up. And very few people are recognizing it is a collective. That is how you're going to win.
It's the Snapchat generation, man. You know, it's like instant gratification. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to press the button and get the dopamine hit and it's going to be all good. You know, I think it's hard. I think there's some, you know, generational change in, you know, the way that we consume content, the way that, you know, salespeople behave, the way they learn. But I think we have to, like you said, you put in a program and a plan, like an actual plan and execute and follow through on it. There's no easy button. There's no little like instant cure that you're going to get by, just saying, hey, we were doing gap selling last year. This year, we're going to do Medic. Like, you know, like none of it makes sense. You know, like you have to really have a full plan, I think is what you're saying is like, you know, whatever you're doing, and that includes enablement, that includes sales, that includes revenue operations, sales operations, all of those things have to tie together. So how do you recommend, so you think about, put yourself in a sales ops person's shoes and, you know, they work with sales enablement you know, what I see in most organizations is they're not in one department or they're not under RevOps, right? You know, in my world it is, but I'd say that's probably in the less than 10% of organizations. So how do you recommend, you know, tying that together? You know, if I'm in sales ops, how do I work with the sales enablement leader? And then, you know, vice versa.
I think the first thing is the CRO, right? She needs to understand the connectivity.
Right.
So what is the purpose, Sandy, in your mind, what is the purpose of sales ops?
Sales ops is to create the process to align the systems, but really to generate value in the organization to help ultimately, you know, meet the goals of, you know.
But in what part of the organization? So I like what you said, demands the sales process. What else though? Like, let's be a little more specific.
Are you talking about sales ops or rev ops?
Sales ops.
So yeah, so that'd be to optimize, you know, anything sales is doing, right? So going to be to operationalize, you know, how they forecast, how they're managing their pipeline, to bring in, you know, accurate deals, to tighten up the sales, you know, days to close, you know, improve your win rates and,
good,
you know, efficiencies, good, and effectiveness of the sales team.
So most of what you just described from a sales op perspective is, most of it is data driven. Fair statement?
Yes.
And at one point you said, you know, they their job is to make the sales process more efficient and maybe shave off a few days or, right, or get deals in faster, understand the sales process, correct?
Correct.
But those are all numbers.
Right.
What can a sales op person do to make a deal come in faster? What can they do?
Yeah, I see your point. They're not actually doing the training, right?
They don't
have enablement, then they need to, right? Okay. They need to figure it out. But
yes.
Yeah, so you need somebody to then communicate that information and enable it to actually have it be used, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
But it happens all the time. People press a button and like all of a sudden the shit's changed in the CRM and nobody knows about it.
Yes. So sales ops collects the data, assesses the data, evaluates the data, creates the processes to capture it or to manage it, right? And then they have the goals of improving it, mm-hmm, right? But see, what people are missing is that improvement piece is not just one function's job. And that's, again, where we came up with the speed model. So if I'm in operations, what happens is back to the easy button and back to this idea that the sales culture is, I got to sell as much shit as possible now. Mm-hmm. The sales ops person can absolutely, quote unquote, shorten the sales cycle in a very tactical way by putting pressure on the salesperson, maybe or maybe not supporting discounts or having constant deal reviews, right? That, again, put pressure on the rep. But there's not really a development element to the sales ops piece. Do you see what I'm saying? So that is not predictable. Yeah. And you can't say that sales ops is improving the rep's ability to get that deal closed faster 10 times.
Right.
He may get that deal closed faster this time, but he's not getting it closed 10 times in a row now. Right. So the sales ops person has to be connected to the rev ops person, and the rev ops person has to be connected to the sales ops because they're reliant on each other. Right? Mm-hmm. The RevOps person is relying on the sales ops person to keep them with the data in hand, tell them what's happening, create the trends, capture the particular skill sets, the metrics that are represented or impacted by the skill sets, right? So, and then sales ops is required to get RevOps to actually start training in the areas that will move the numbers that aren't moving. They're interdependent on each other. And very few people treat them that way, number one. And number two, people I talked earlier, they don't even understand the correlation. That's the part that trips me out. They don't even understand. RevOps doesn't understand exactly, when I train these things, what should I see move? Right. And sales ops is like, hey, these things are bad. What should I be trying to improve? Like, even know.
Right. Yeah. I think to your point, I mean, enablement and sales ops and rev ops, like the
oh, I know. I kept saying ops. Sorry, I meant to say enablement.
I knew what you meant.
Everybody listening, so I meant sales, to say enablement versus ops. Thank you.
Yeah. So I knew what you meant. But the point of what you're saying is, so from operations to understand that in order for, you know, the process to be effectively executed and have the impact, you have to have an enablement strategy and an enablement person to actually go out and deploy it and like literally enable the people to do it. You can't just press a button, expect it magically to work. But on the other hand too, you also have to give the data then back to the enablement person. And I think that's also that gets missed a lot, where you're supposed to be like, well, I need enablement to roll this out. But then an enablement rolls it out, but then enablement doesn't get anything back after that on like,
no feedback.
Did it work? What is the metric? What is the result? So like, it's a two-way street too, right? And for whatever reason, I've heard enablement leaders like, you know, oh, well, I don't want to bother the person, or, you know, they don't work with me. And it's like, there's some weird like hierarchical thing going on. And it's like, dude, you just got to get the data. You just got to go ask them. If they don't want to do it, then they're not doing their job. Like, then that's another problem. Then they're just being a jerk, you know?
What's also, but it, again, it goes back to, I don't really think, and I'm so passionate about the speed model. I'm so passionate about it because it's so crystal clear how it connects everything. But that goes back to, in my opinion, the CRO or the CSO, right?
Because by the way, whoa, hold on. By the way, I know you're a girl, Dad. I love how you made the CRO automatically a woman. So thank you.
Anyway, yeah, absolutely. Look, we all got to work on our subconscious bias and be very close attention.
I love it. I caught that.
Thank you. So it's if he or she is not, hasn't structured the organization in a way so that their sales ops person understands the importance of revenue enablement, and revenue enablement doesn't have them working together, that's a leadership problem, number one.
Right.
Number two, if the sales ops person doesn't understand what behaviors of the salespeople are most affecting negatively or positively those numbers and those operational elements that he or she is responsible for, then they don't know their job. And then if RevOps doesn't understand, if revenue enablement does not understand what happens when they do the training and when they provide the L&D to the numbers, then they aren't doing their job. That's the piece that everybody's missing. And I'll give you another example. And this one is, I can't get back to them. Like, sometimes I wish I could just do this for free, because then people would just hire me all the time, because I want to change. And it's amazing what people use to prevent themselves from changing. But another massive company, not mad, but very big company we worked with, the CRO, I love the guy, looked me right in the eye. And he said, we probably have thousands of deals in the pipeline that we know are not closing. We know our pipeline hygiene is horrific. So they built a process on top of the pipeline to figure out what their real pipeline looks like, because they have so much junk in it. And then from that process, another process on top of that to be able to forecast from that. And I tried challenging, why are you letting this happen? And his answer was, I don't have time for it. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, you are the CRO of a massive organization and this is acceptable. And then I actually recommended and offered to help fix it, and they weren't interested.
Wow.
There is way too much incompetence out there, and it blows. I don't mind people who try to fix something and fail. I can live with that.
Yeah.
But people who see a problem and they know that the band-aid on it, and they just turn their back. Like, I know I just have a cork in that dam and it's probably going to break, or it's leaking all the time. But I'll help you fix it. No, I don't want to spend the money.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have your job.
Right. Yeah. But you know, it's hard to change the status quo, which is what you're trying to do, is get people to get out of their comfort zone and change the status quo.
Yep.
And it's so much easier to, you know, put a band-aid on it, but it's like, what ends up happening, and I see this all the time, particularly in the tech stacks and process, is like you have a band-aid on top of a band-aid, and then it just becomes this ugly thing that is just festering and infected, and it happens so quickly. I mean, like, people will add a stage because, you know, in a sales process, because they think, oh, well, somebody's not doing, here's an example. Saw one the other day, like a demo stage. Well, like, that's an activity.
Yeah.
Well, we added a demo stage because we weren't sure everybody was doing demos. So we want to add a stage for it. Like, this doesn't make any sense to me. Like, it's illogical, but it's a band-aid, and it's easier in the short term than fighting the status quo. So, and I think that's, you know, that's what you're talking about here. It's like, you know, you have to really take a look at the full process of the metrics and have that accountability.
Yes. 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 I like what you said there. Yes. They need to step back and look at the full picture. And I'm not sure enough people really truly, and again, this is like my little metaphor, another metaphor I love, I'll go the alien route. If you ask a million people if they believe in aliens, 99.9% will say yes. You ask that same, you tell that same group of people you saw an alien, and 99.9% will say, will think you're lying. Right? Nice. So same thing here, right? It's that idea that if I ask enough people, they'll say that their organization is nailed, but if you actually go in and look at it, it's not.
I love it. That's a great way to kind of wrap up here. I'd love to go on here all day long because I think we could about this topic and a lot of other topics. But what would you like to leave the listeners with? You know, maybe a mantra or just some really powerful tips that you could leave with the group.
I think I would just like to wrap up what we talked about and really challenge from the CRO all the way down to the frontline manager. I'm going to leave salespeople out of this. Salespeople, really, in my opinion right now, take way too much blame for what's happening in sales organizations. They take way too much blame. They get the 60, 90, 120 days to get going and they're canned, or they miss quarter a couple of times, they're canned. But the truth of the matter is, it's the environment that leadership brings from the frontline manager to sales enablement to sales ops to the CRO, et cetera. So I would like organizations to get real and step back and start with very simple. What is our CRM hygiene? Start with that, right? What is our sales methodology? What are we expecting salespeople to do? And how well is that defined? Then what are we providing them to make sure that they are experts in that methodology? How are we making every single salesperson expert in that methodology? Then how are we implementing that methodology throughout the entire sales process, not just in the beginning, not just in learning and development, but how are we leveraging that methodology through every single call? What tools do we give frontline managers to reinforce the method? What tools are we given to reinforce it? How are we managing the frontline managers and their ability to reinforce it? Right? Like, how are we addressing every step of the sales model? And we call it the speed model of the layers, because they are distinct layers. Whether you want to treat your organization as if they exist or not is up to you, but it doesn't mean they don't. You have a development layer where you have to develop your people. You have an opportunity layer, an execution layer where they're actually doing the job, and you've got to be able to manage and build process around that. And then there's a forecasting layer, and everyone needs to be treated independently with a connection to the one below it. And if you're not doing that, you're not optimized.
Wow. I mean, that is, wow. Every CRO, every leader in organization really needs to understand that and listen to this. And I couldn't agree with you more. It really starts from the top and it has to really circle all the way through the organization, from end to end. So thank you so much for joining today. I really appreciate everything and the discussion, and I know we'll talk soon. Thanks again, Keenan.
Thank you, Sandy. You're good. I enjoyed it.
This has been another episode of RevOps Unboxed in partnership with the Revenue Operations Alliance. Until next time, keep unboxing.